we got the speech pretty well in order, a feeling of great gratification, and I had a short while to stretch out and rest and called my house guests to welcome them before Mr. Pear came for a comb out, and then into my yellow flowing chiffon, and then those harrowing few minutes while Lyndon is late, and then dashes into his room, and then in an incredible few minutes is dressed, and Bess is on the phone, timing that so brief ride from Blair House and our descent in the elevator and out the north portico so that we arrive just as the last rifle butts are clicking on the driveway and once more the big black car rolls up. This time it really was a family affair upstairs in the yellow room. Tan Pu Ying Chong Kaw, I mastered it, and the Prime Minister, and three daughters, and plenty of talk about our grandchildren, and Hubert without Muriel. He said she was recuperating well, and Dean and Virginia, and the Ungers, and Angie and Robin. Among our gifts to them, and the best, I thought, was a cute picture of their grandchildren, obtained by some cooperation and pre-planning, attractively framed. There's to us a very elaborate wooden screen. We marched downstairs. This time I was with Hubert, and in the East Room took our places to meet the 140-odd guests. The Clark Cliffords from the Cabinet. Our military relation with the Ties is pretty marked. And from the Senate, the Sam Irvins and the Allen Bibles, the Caleb Boggs, and the Birch Byes. Marvella, always one of our best guests. And there was the Governor of West Virginia and Mrs. Hewlett Smith. And from Governor John Dalton of Missouri. A sizable contingent from the House. Barefoot Sanders always takes care of his own, the Hale Boggs heading the list. From the entertainment world, there were the Bob Hopes. He was followed all evening by the press, listening for every word. How tiring that must be, for him, I mean. And the James Browns, he's a Negro singer, who in the recent riots took to the streets in a sound truck, calling on the young folks, his own constituency and admirers, to cool it. Best put him at Lyndon's table. Two couples who knew Thailand well, the Maxwell Taylors and the Graham Martins, the ambassador when we were there. From the press, the Walter Annenbergs, and I had time to murmur as they went down the line. Every day I loved and adored the Benjamin Franklin in the green room, Isabel Shelton, Bob Thompson's, the Earl Wilsons. In business, the Howard Rambins, he's head of Texaco. And the Franco Scalamandris. He makes some of the most beautiful silk in our country, and would, I thought, be interested to meet other famous silk makers of the world. There was General and Mrs. Leonard Chapman. Their own are entertaining tonight, the Marine. From the staff, the Larry Temples and Juanita Roberts. The Edward Bennett Williams, he's a fascinating man to me. And our hosts of house guests. The Reverend Franklin Jackson pressed my hand when he passed and said we tried hard, but we didn't make it. He'd been leading the forces for Hubert here in the District of Columbia. I had Mrs. Jean Rostow on the Prime Minister's right, a good guest who kept the talk going. The Prime Minister and I talked of the Mekong Delta River project and what it could mean to his area, of the King and the Queen and our wonderful visit. I gave myself only about a C+ for sparking the most interesting conversations with either of my partners, the Prime Minister or Tanit Komen, the Minister of Foreign Affairs. But the toasts were actually some of the best I remember, both personal and substantive. Lyndon spoke of his sons-in-law and the son of the Prime Minister, who were all fighting in Vietnam. He closed with a toast to the U.S. delegation on the eve of its departure for the conference table, where we will negotiate in good faith, and a reassurance to our Asian allies in the room. We will never abandon our commitments or compromise the future of Asia at the negotiating table. And Kittikachorn answered in the same vein, warning that grave problems lie ahead in preventing communist forces from reaping at the conference table the victory they could not achieve in the battlefield. He said the seeds of a wider conflict would be sown if aggression is allowed to succeed and smaller nations are toppled by terror, subversion, and sheer force. After dinner, while coffee and liqueurs were being served, Lyndon and the Prime Minister went upstairs to the treaty room and inaugurated it by direct telephone service via ComSat satellite between the U.S. and Thailand. When I first heard they were going to do it, my immediate thought was whether they were going to use that ancient telephone, circa 1900, a chief conversation piece of the treaty room, but no, two matching brand new ones were in, so they could both sit at the treaty table and talk and listen simultaneously. The treaty room was chosen because it was here, around 1877, that the first telephone was installed in White House. The press trooped in with them and reported a very good connection, but not a very substantive conversation. And then we all filed out onto the balconies. Lyndon and Mrs. Kitty Kachon, the Prime Minister and I, and a large assemblage of guests out onto the Truman balcony, the rest off the Blue Room below us, for a unique first-time entertainment here at the White House. The U.S. Marine Corps in their evening parade, against a backdrop of the Washington Monument, the Jefferson Memorial, and a full moon, and there must have been a lump in a lot of watchers' throats. I thought of Linda. She'd come out on the porch with us, wearing the pale pink dress that she'd worn at Lucy's wedding, and of all the Friday nights she had watched this parade with Chuck, and how it took me a good many Friday nights to realize that she was interested in something more than parades. He had been the commander. It was impressive, thrilling, a silent drill platoon, the most marvelous precision, the drum and bugle corps. Captain Barry Beck was the company commander. And then the whole evening erupted into a display of fireworks that soared and burst and lit up the sky. A magnificent sight, but I wondered what the folks in the suburbs were thinking, whether the National Airport was under attack or whether the rioters were really here in force. Fireworks as entertainment began with President John Adams, who suggested them as the right way to celebrate Independence Day from one end of the continent to the other, from this time forward and forevermore. Well, in our 4.5 years here, we've pretty well run the gamut of entertainment, from grand opera singers to Indian dancers, but tonight was indeed a first. Champagne was passed after the last great chrysanthemum, a fiery blossom, exploded in the air. And very soon, the Prime Minister and Mrs. Kitty Kachon made their departure. And Lennon and I mingled with the guest for a considerable time. He looked happy tonight, relaxed, and not as tired as he has. I went upstairs with Linda a little past 12.